Yo, what's the heavy hitter DJ Wala, and you're now plugged into the Subject Thread Podcast with your host, Nyla Lavelle.
Like, there are certain people that have these ability to be independent contractors, self-employed, day traders, real estate investors, singers, artists, those type of people. Avenues within the real estate umbrella, because there's so many different ways to make money in real estate. I think a lot of people miss that.
Right. And that's very true, because when you say real estate, that's the umbrella, right? That's what, and then there's so many other strategies. So real quick, what I'll do for our listeners is explain a little bit about what wholesaling real estate is.
I like that question, because with Kanye, I was just talking about this yesterday, and I feel like with Kanye, he's like, he does things that we all do behind closed doors.
Yeah, I've never been asked that.
It's a Subject Thread Podcast. We different here.
You are now tuned in to Subject Thread Podcast, giving you real dose of storyboard conversations, art, money, culture, and more.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is your girl in the building, Nyla Lavelle, for another special episode of Subject Thread Podcast. And I have a very special guest with us today. We're in the West Coast. With our founder and chef of Vegan Mac and Yeast. He's also a food activist, so we're going to step into that as well. Mr. Chef Allende is in the building.
Yo, yo. Thank you for having me. This is fantastic.
Awesome, awesome. So we're in the West Coast with you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, so your place is out here, or your home base?
No, my actual home base right now is in Atlanta, but I spent a lot of time in Vegas. And okay. I saw that you were in front of Monty's the other day, so I couldn't gauge if you were in Cali or if you were in Vegas, but I saw you at Monty's, and Monty's is a spot that I like to get my shakes from.
Oh, yeah. They opened up one out on 3rd Street out here.
Okay, cool. Are you in Cali?
Yeah, I'm in LA.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. I saw that and I was like, I don't know what party's in, because I see that a lot of your food is based in the West Coast, which is pretty dope. And I was like, the whole food.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm originally from the Pacific Northwest. So I moved to Cali, 7 years ago, I think. And then my food, my mac and yeast, we are in Whole Foods in this, what they call the Southern and Pacific region. So that's Southern California, Arizona, Las Vegas, Maui, and Oahu. And that's 63 stores, I think, between it all.
That's a good thing.
It's great. It's really great. I've been selling to Whole Foods since 2018. We launched, May of 2018. So yeah, it's been a roller coaster. It's been fun though. I thought I had gotten to the point, I've been a chef for 20 years, right? So I feel like I had gotten to the point where I knew everything there was to know about the food business. And then I find this new, new to me part of it, right? Food distribution and doing food service, the behind the scenes stuff, right? So all the food that you go to the store and you get those frozen things out of the freezer, the dinners, or the mac and cheeses, or the burritos, or whatever. A lot of times that comes from like a handful of what they call co-manufacturers who create the food and send it off to Target and Costco and Trader Joe's, et cetera, right? And me getting into that side of it was just like, first of all, no, I haven't met a Black person yet on that side of it. My co-packer happens to be like North African. I think they're from Algeria, maybe. I'm not sure, but I know he's North African. And he's, he took me on. He was like, I like the name of your company and I like your attitude. You remind me of myself. He had started off vegan, doing just vegan food, and then expanded to bring in more money. But he's like, I started just like you. I started selling hummus. So it's nice to find that. I think you need that in every industry, like somebody that shares a common experience.
Exactly. So question, you said that you started cooking and being a chef 20 years ago. Now you don't look like you been doing this for 20 years. You got a baby face still. So let me just put that out there, which is a great thing. See what veganism does. Mm-hmm. So question, were you doing vegan food 20 years ago? When did you become a vegan?
So I grew up vegan.
Right? Awesome.
I was born into it. So my parents decided that they wanted to go vegan when they had me. And so they've got a couple of cookbooks and, you know, my mom, so my maternal grandfather passed away like early on in my mom's pregnancy with me. And so it was from like complications of a bad diet, basically. And so she said, we're going to break the cycle. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to live like this. Like, you don't have to die like this. We're going to break the cycle. And that was the decision to go vegan. So she threw all the eggs out, you know, and threw everything out and started fresh.
That's awesome. And that's something that I think that speaks to our culture right now, because I think that there's a lot of disparities within healthcare in terms of cancers and diabetes. You're not the first person that said like they had a lineage of a family member that passed away because of food. Why do you think so many people in our culture are kind of like scared of being a vegan?
Because there's no representation in it. Well, there traditionally has not been representation in it. Like, you know, you look at vegan food and you see it's prepared by, I mean, listen, when I grew up, it was, you go to a co-op and it was like the white folks with the long armpit hair and the homemade skirts, you know, barefoot in a co-op, you know, like that was where we would go to like get the groceries that we needed, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, as a kid. And so me thinking back on it, I'm like, yeah, I always thought it was weird because of what I saw was weird. I was like, I knew I wasn't that, you know. Here I am growing up in the 80s and the 90s, and I'm like, I know I'm not these hippie motherfuckers, but I'm also not the Crips and the Bloods that are in my neighborhood and the crack dealers and the crackheads and I'm not either one of those things, but here I am, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it was just such an interesting dichotomy. And I think that when people, you know, that's why I try to be as out there as possible and like put as much as like the culture that I grew up in as possible out through my work, because you can do all that and be vegan, right?
Absolutely.
And the second thing is you have to, what's the word I'm looking for? You can't eat veganism, right? Like you have to eat the food of it. So the idea of veganism is like, oh, these save the planet, hippie, blah, 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 blah. But the actuality is like, I got to eat food every day. Mm-hmm. And you sit down to a meal every day. And especially the way that Black people experience food, we experience it as celebration. We experience it for pleasure. Sometimes the only pleasure you can get in a day as a Black person, you know, surviving America is a good meal, right?
That's correct.
You know, so food is very different. It's a very unique and it's a core thing, right? It's a core need. So people have very different associations with food. Black people tend to have associations with what was prepared for them in the house, but a lot of food that was created by Black families was a result of struggle, mm-hmm, right? If it was making the best of chitlins, if it was, you know, trying to feed your family on government food, government cheese, you know, whatever it was the best of those bad situations, you know. And then go further back, even in the times of slavery, Black people, I mean, where chitlins came from and all that, because you got Black people would get like a very, very small amount of meat, right? To last them a week or 2 weeks. You'd get these herring fish or, you know, some little scraps here and there, but largely the diet of the slave diet was vegetarian or vegan.
And that's amazing. And I try to tell a lot of people that we did not start out eating meat on a daily basis. That wasn't part of our diet.
No, that's a status thing. That's mm-hmm. actually, that's like a trying to be like white people thing. That's like a trying to be, or trying to be like in what happens in the Big House, or trying to move on up to the East Side, or trying to show that, I mean, the same. I mean, you look at hip hop, right? Everybody was on Cristal, and then they were like, yeah, we don't want y'all drinking this, but we wanted to drink Cristal because white people drink it.
That is correct. They did not want us having that. Just in case you guys forgot the 90s.
You know what I'm saying? But like,
no, it's true.
And, and I, I feel like I should put an asterisk on this when I say white people. I'm talking about those white people, right? I'm not talking about allies. I'm not talking about, like, because I know real allies. I know real white people who are, like, out here, like, riding for us, right?
Exactly.
But I'm talking about white supremacists when I say white people, or just that. Or I mean, that's the umbrella of it, you know.
But the powers that be.
Yeah, that filters down to rich. That filters down to powerful. That filters down to everything. But yeah, you know, like food. So it's like, I'm going to get this food. I'm going to get this filet mignon so I can prove to them that I could eat here.
Mm-hmm.
But who the fuck are you? Who are you proving it to? You know what I'm saying? Like, who cares?
Now, question. When you say vegan, are you a bad vegan or a good vegan? Because when people think vegan, they just think automatically health. Like, I'm a vegan and that's it. But there are different complexities in that word.
Yeah, there are. There are. And I'm a balanced vegan. I think that food, let's look at food in general, right? So the way your metabolism works, it starts off strong as can be, right? From when you're born all up until you peak in your 20s, right? That's when you're the speed of your metabolism. You know, you can look at, I remember what my body was doing when I worked out back then versus what my body does now. And
I know.
Like, you know, you're 20, you're like, let me just stop eating. Let me skip two meals this week. And then you're like, now. Right now, I'm like, I skip a meal. Like, I'm hungry. I'm going to double down on the next meal.
Things do change when you get your 30s, everybody.
Yeah, it is not a game. But just look at the life of your metabolism, right? So it starts to slow down. So you should change how you eat. Like, you can afford to eat garbage, you know, and you shouldn't. Because that also has consequences, you know. A lot of I know a lot of the kids that I grew up with are now like, Hyundai, can you give me some of those vegan recipes? You know, my doctor said, or I gotta lose this or that, or you know, I mean, listen, poor health, it plagues us, you know, it plagues Black people, and it's directly from what you eat.
That is accurate. I tell people all the time that disease, it does start in the gut. A lot of it does start in the gut, and a lot of people, they missed that whole concept. So when I was looking on your website and I saw like you were really conscious in regards to dairy, I saw that, which is a huge issue within melanated communities.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw that. What was it on? I Eat Grass. I'm pulling it up right now. You have so many different dope brands, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I saw that. And I said, he has a disclaimer about dairy on here. Wow. So you're very conscious about that.
I am. And that's something that I mean, listen, dairy is one of the things that we as human beings technically don't even need to eat. Mm-hmm. Right. The way that dairy is used throughout the American diet, right, is based on French cooking. So like, you know, you study like French culinary technique. You know, it's everything is eggs, milk, and butter. That's like the base of almost everything, right?
Mm.
And if you want to season it, maybe you throw some bacon in it or something like that. So that filters through to the American diet, but that's just one way of eating, right? But it is dominant, but it's just one way of eating it. And the way that dairy is like hard to digest. Again, it's because you're a human. You're not a baby cow. You're not a bovine, right? So, like, you're not supposed to ingest that. You're not supposed to take, you're not supposed to, your body's not really built to handle it. Our bodies can adjust to a lot of things. And we have technology to help us and all that sort of thing. But really, your body's not supposed to do that.
That is correct. And I was actually reading an article that says that dairy has a lot of issues in terms of cancer, diabetes, and even a correlation if someone is classified like ADHD and stuff like that, like how dairy is a culprit in regards to that.
Yeah. I'm not a doctor. I always have to say that.
But, yeah.
You know, I just know that dairy, it does a lot of things and you know, it's very integrated into the food system. Another thing that I learned when I started doing these things, when I started working in this part of the world, in this part of the food world, is that there are certain ingredients, there are certain chemicals, there are certain things that are just inherent in produced food, like manufactured food. for science reasons or for cost reasons or what have you. And then you have to like go in and demand to not use certain things, right? Like, no, I don't want that. I need this.
Wow.
Dairy's like that. And they're starting to use soy like that. They use soy protein isolate in a lot of different products to fill up for protein at a lower cost. But what happens when you separate the soy protein and you isolate it from the whole molecule, the whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like just pull it out, your body can't digest it. And then that's where people get that overload of soy and that sort of fear of soy in the world, because you think, oh, I'm taking in a lot of soy if I have soy milk in my coffee, but actually you probably had soy milk in crackers or, you know, in those chicken nuggets or, you know, wherever. Mm-hmm. You know, and the big thing about being vegan is reading labels. So I'm very, you know, vegans are more educated on the food they put in their body. I think everybody should be.
Yo, what's the heavy hitter, DJ Wala, and you're now plugged into the Subject Thread podcast with your host, Nyla Lavelle.
Absolutely. I was going to ask you to speak to about the soy issue because a lot of people didn't understand, but you actually just answered that. When the separation happens, you can't digest, similar to how milk is. Now, in terms of being vegan, what is your favorite dish that you like to cook?
I hate this question.
Why?
Because I never have an answer for it. I mean, listen, I've been experimenting a lot lately. And so the new thing I've been trying to do is find recipes that I like or that I would buy food of and try to make it authentically. So for instance, I made a ramen broth last week.
Oh,
and it came out pretty good. Like I literally just followed a recipe and I made sure my thing is like really going for authenticity. So I made sure I had every ingredient. Like I didn't, cause you know, when you can cook, you're like, I'll have that, but I put a little bit of this in. Like I ain't do none of that.
You didn't cut no corners.
Nope. Because again, I'm trying to be like, if you come to my house and I'm like, oh, it's ramen night, it's not going to be like ramen with gravy. It's going to be ramen. You feel me?
Uh-huh. No, I feel
like, cause like growing up, like my mom used to like attempt things. And like, I know a lot of that's just a discipline, right? Cause you attempt things and you're like, well, you know how to make something good. If you're a good cook. And I think people get that. It's like you can be cooking something and like, okay, maybe isn't going the way I planned on it, but I know how to make it good. Boom, let me add this, and this. And now it's good. So I wanted to take that element out and just be like, let me try to make it as authentically as possible. And then I'll put my spin on it. So the next time I try something, I'm going to put I'll improvise a little bit, I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay. Because I'm going to be honest with you. I'm looking at the peach cobbler. I mean, that right there. I haven't had really any good peach cobbler that's vegan yet, but I've only been a true vegan for 2 years come October. So let me just put that out there as well. Now, my mom has been a vegan for over 20 years, and she's been trying to get everybody in the family to do that. So I finally decided I'm going to do that. But I'm definitely looking at this peach cobbler. And then and then you have the blueberry ginger, the smoothie. I mean, you have things that are so authentic and just different, but I know you know that.
Actually, you know what? I post up what I like to eat. That's really, my videos are like, you know what? I be killing some fries. I love pie. Listen, pie is like my favorite go-to dessert. I have so many pie recipes that I've just come up with over the years. Like I had like a blueberry orange cobbler thing, you know, like, cause I love like fruit, like that warm fruit, that crispy crust, and then throw some ice cream on that. Woo!
So question, not to give too much away from everything that you're doing, because I know you have the recipe stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, when we're replacing egg, are we replacing that with like applesauce?
You know what? Here's the thing with, and I've noticed I said pies and not cakes, because I'm still working on my cakes.
Okay.
Now, the thing with the egg, right? So let's break it down scientifically. An egg is a binder, right? It holds things together. Mm-hmm. So what other things can we use as a binder? We can use flax seed.
Okay.
With water, that becomes a gel. We could use applesauce to, I'm still experimenting with this, but to an extent, and we can use tapioca flour, which is essentially what the powdered egg is anyway. Now, what happens is it's not only a binder, it's a protein in that binder, and it's also adding liquid volume, right? So you have to bind, you have to figure out what amount of liquid volume you're adding, because that's what makes the cake moist, right? So if it's going to be the amount of water you use in your flax, or if it's going to be the amount of applesauce that you put in, you know, you could use, I haven't tried it, but you know how they make the aquafaba, which is the juice off of the I wanted to try using that liquid because it has a protein, has some protein in it. So I haven't tried it yet, but that's the thing. So again, just looking at, if you look at food scientifically and take out the elements, you can always find a replacement. Then you just have to figure out what the ratio and the numbers are.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't really played around with too many dishes in terms of sweets. I did learn how to make a little bit of a cupcake, but it still needs some love and tender to that. So I'm looking for the binder. I'm like, how do I do this? But you know, there's so many YouTube videos. Sometimes my intention is like, I'll sit and watch it. Sometimes I won't. But it's glad to hear that we have a chef that's still working on that as well. So I don't feel so bad.
Look, I made a couple of cakes early on in the quarantine, and I ate them myself. And I was like, I can't do this. I was like, I can't. I had to recruit some people to give these cakes to. And I just kind of got away from it because I was like, there's just cake just sitting in the refrigerator calling me like, Yenda, you know, I'm in here. And I'm like, I do. And it was a wrap.
So was quarantine good to you? It seems like. Did you put on some pounds too?
Yeah. I mean, the quarantine, as you know, it's been insane. But the first like 6 weeks I was in complete denial. I was like, this isn't happening. You can't keep me in my house. I'm a grown man. I was just like bouncing off the walls and like kind of like losing it a little bit. And then I accepted it, which is like the craziest part, that like then I accepted that the government put me in my house. And then I started to like kind of get back into my creative juices flowing, you know, and doing, you know, I've been doing walks and stuff to keep my, you know, nightly walks and stuff. Now I'm back working out in the morning. So like I'm, you know, it's been, yeah, but yeah, I had to definitely work off some food because that was my nightly walks were not averaging the amount of cakes that I was because I did like a carrot cake, I did a banana bread. Then I was making candy. Like, I think it's up there. I made a caramel corn. I mean, I just, yeah.
So it's your like, creative it's like, juices were flowing.
Yeah. It's like living with someone, like an alter ego with a superpower to make you fat. Like
You should have been a comedian as well. I'm sure you were told that. When you're cooking, are there any tracks that you're listening to when you're cooking?
It depends on the day. Like sometimes I'd be thinking so much that I'll forget to put it on, but I definitely like, I've been on like a experimental album kick. So I was listening to, Jimi Hendrix, the Jimi Hendrix Experience, which is the album with like the trippy art on the front and like the yellow. And it's like a little mosaic thing. But, that album is widely regarded as, you know, one of the best, not only because of what he was doing, but like how it was engineered. The sound of it itself is quite interesting. You know, he'll sing in one ear and play the guitar in the other. And it's just like, it's just interesting. And I always knew of Jimi Hendrix because A, he's from Seattle. I'm from Seattle. And then my dad had some records around, but I didn't really get around to appreciating it until lately. So that, not, you know, or I enjoy like a good live album on in the background too, you know, kind of fill up the atmosphere.
Okay. Jimi Hendrix was just ahead of his time. Let's just
very much so. Very much. I mean, cause look, Jimi Hendrix birthed Red Hot Chili Peppers, birthed Nirvana, all those dudes who came after him, all those like crazy hard hitting styles, Rage Against the Machine, like all that came from what Jimmy was doing. And he was like playing the feedback of his guitar. He was like, he was just doing crazy stuff. But then you look at how it filters down through rock and roll, and through the grunge era and the punk era, and you're like, oh, this is all Jimmy.
Yeah. Nirvana is actually one of my favorites.
I love Nirvana. Oh, let me ask you a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm trying to figure this out. I just got into Juice WRLD. Do you heard his music?
I haven't heard Juice WRLD's music.
Okay, listen. Okay, well then I need you to explore even just his last album that just came out posthumously. But I say
I'm writing him down though.
Yeah, I say he is the black version, the black people's Kurt Cobain.
Really?
Yeah.
That's some shoes to fill. So I definitely want to check him out.
This is a theory. I mean, just listen to his last album first.
Okay.
It's very haunting because it's like, it's one of those albums that
he died.
Yeah. And I don't know, this guy like Kurt Cobain, but I was like, it's very different, but if you remember what like Smells Like Teen Spirit felt like when it came out, you know, like who.
It still gets me in the mood.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
What's up, everyone? It's the next big thing, the heavy hitter DJ Wala, and you are now plugged into the Subject Thread Podcast. You can check out episodes on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts.
What is your favorite song from them, Nirvana? Man, and I'll tell you mine.
Come As You Are.
Ah, you took it. Ah, you took my favorite song.
I mean, is there?
Yeah, you took my favorite song. No, it's cool. It's cool.
Yeah.
No, yeah. The bridges, the change, and it was just like the melody. Like Kirk was ahead of his time as well. Just classic, iconic people. To be referenced to some of the artists that are out to this day, you know, you'd left some type of a mark.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking about entertainment, tell us about your film. I was definitely looking at some of that, and I was like, some of this is a timepiece.
Yeah. Yeah. So Augustus is the name of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a surrealist drama that is based on real events. And you know, its core, it's about a man who decides to risk it all to save his family, you know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it presents a certain way, but when I'm obviously trying not to give it away because we have a few more film festivals we'll be screening at coming up soon. So, you know, I'll put up some more links, but I wrote it a couple years ago, maybe like 3 years ago, because we shot it last year. And it started off with like one scene in my head, like a speech, you know, and I was in my mind, it was like, this isn't exactly what it turned out to be, but I was visualizing like, what would an argument for reparations look like?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, like what would you say? Like, how would you convince America that to finally see their original sin? Right. Like, how do you get through to these people? And so that's where it started from for me. And then putting it in the 1800s and then having, again, surrealist present day elements in it as well, is just kind of how it came to me. And originally I was like, this is nuts. People are going to laugh at this and say this is dumb. And so I didn't write it for like a long time. And then I was just like, you know what? Why not?
Mm-hmm. And I think that writers are like visionaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you have to see the whole thing. So you definitely are. Like, you know, you have to see it before anyone else sees it and then try to convey it in a way, you know, and then we had to shoot it in a way that conveyed that. And there's very, you know, the acting had to be very specific. And it's a part of filmmaking that is a little bit more challenging. You know, if you had period piece plus surrealism, it's a challenge to pull it off well, you know.
Really?
I think we did, to be honest.
Yeah, I actually love time pieces. So that was the first thing that captured me. I'm a historian. I love history. So as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, that was the first element. So I actually really like that.
What part of history are you studying? Or what did you, are you excited about? Or like, what did you, you know, recently studied, because I've been kind of into that too, researching history, especially Black people's history.
I love the Harlem Renaissance era.
Mm.
I think that is a unspoken. It needs to be spoken a little bit more in terms of fashion, in terms of culture, in terms of civil rights. So I definitely love that. And I actually love the 1800s as well, because that century, a lot of things happened in that century. Yeah. So I like the 1800s as well.
Yeah, a lot did happen. You know, I feel like that the 1800s are very similar to where we are today. So it's like the mid 1800s and leading up to the Civil War, because I just feel like, you know, with all these shooters that, you know, these armed white males out here, it just feels like America has, like, we go through this. We're on kind of like a really large circle or a cycle with this, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we had the 60s, you know, and it comes back around, and then we have where we are today, which I would say is probably the most active since the 60s for, you know, in the civil rights movement that we've been. And people, it seems like it's like if you don't, it literally, like, you don't know your history, so you can't see that this is the same fight. Like, you know, I told my parents that, like, I marched in June or whatever, and they were like, man, you're still doing that, huh? Like, they did it 30, 40 years ago. And so when people don't understand that we're really on this fighting the same struggle since abolition, right? Since Jim Crow, since, like, this, it's the same thing. It's just less blatant, mm-hmm. right? There's not as many, you know, lynchings and cross burnings, but they're still lynching and cross burning.
Yeah, that is true.
People. So we're on the same, it's like keeps repeating.
How does that work for you to be a vegan activist?
Something that's sort of been in my head since I was a kid. You know, my parents said that, you know, as it evolved for them, that they found out that their diet was the biggest revolution for them. You know, they said smoke. They used to smoke pack a day and eat meat and drink and do all this stuff. And they said, well, you know, once I found that I could change my body or change the way that I eat, they saw it as an elevation of consciousness. And so for me, again, to provide people with food, because people will say, oh, Allende, you know, if you cooked, I could be vegan. If I could eat this every day, I'd be vegan. And so, since I've been working, I've been behind the scenes, I'm like, okay, well, I want to test that theory. Like, I'm going to expand my line of foods. It's a very long and arduous thing, but that's what I'm going to do, right? To get to those people, because it's not for me, business wise, it's not in a restaurant. Like, I don't want to own a restaurant again. I want to meet people where they are. Like, people go to the grocery store. I go to the grocery store every day. Almost, because I always forget something or need something, you know, and I know there's not a lot of food there that I eat. I know there's a lot of food there I can put together and make something, but I can't go in the freezer section and be like, oh, I want this, and it go home and it actually be good.
You are correct about that. That's some of the challenges that I find sometimes with being a vegan, that if you want to just grab a dinner and throw it in the microwave, the quality is not there.
Right. That's because somebody says, hey, I need a vegan skew on this whatever, and then somebody spits out something that is technically vegan, but nobody's there to, like, taste it. And that's the thing about, one of the things about my food, I'm very chef driven, and even to the point where I'm in my factory testing stuff, and they're like, oh, we're not used to having a chef here.
Oh, dope. You know,
we're used to people just being like, we need this vegan thing, and we test it to the best of our ability, and then they green light it. You know, that's why you see those stories about, like, for instance, that vegan mac and cheese Trader Joe's put out. I mean, I hadn't tasted it, but I read a lot of reviews, and I know exactly how it happened. I was like, somebody said, I need this vegan. I need it for this price. And that's what you got. You know,
it's not all of that, but I love Trader Joe's though.
I love Trader Joe's too. I want Trader Joe's to purchase my mac and cheese and sell it to people. If you're listening, Trader Joe's, to be clear. But again, I'm just saying, like, I know how, I'm just, after you've seen how the game works, you're like, oh, I get it.
Okay.
I know what. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I got you. Yeah. So what are your future plans?
My future plans are to continue to grow the retail side of my business and expand in the food service as well. We've been kind of in a holding pattern as far as like new clients because of obviously COVID.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, in the food, my food business is very much supply and demand. It's so much easier for me to sell something when people want something versus when I want to sell it to them. So I make it known. It's known that I have the good food and I reach out to people and, you know, we're making things, you know, progress from there. On the writing side of stuff, I don't know. I don't want to promise anything, but there'll be definitely more recipes. I was some kind of cookbook thing. I'm not sure what it's going to be or when it's going to be, but I've been feeling like it might be time to do that again. And Augustus, I am working on, you know, a bigger version of it.
Okay. So, yeah. In the recipe book, you're going to have that peach cobbler.
Yeah. I'm. I mean, as I'm doing these recipes and stuff and I'm like, oh, okay. I can see this as a little collection of recipes. So,
okay. So to go back to the film really quickly. Mm-hmm. Now, do you plan on having that streamed one day or is just more or less festivals for now?
It's going to be festivals for now. And then we'll put it on it. Augustus.film is the website.
Okay.
And people can go there and eventually we'll house it there for people to see.
Okay. You already went faster than I was going to say. I was going to say, give out all your social media. You question for you. Now, what would you tell your 20-year-old self?
Don't be afraid of what you're capable of doing.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. I was always very smart, very quick, very sharp. And it scared me because nobody around me was like that. And because I opened my first business when I was like 21, you know, I opened a cafe and like, yeah. And like, there was again, when you're 20s, the energy is just kind of flowing. You're like, oh yes, this and this. But I was like, oh shit, nobody's with me, you know, like,
and you're doing everything.
And sometimes it's like, I guess for different people, you need that, you know, you need a support system, you know, you need to know that there are other, cause that was like my whole life, you know, there was no other vegans around. There were no other, I grew up Rastafarian too. So here we are, nappy headed vegans. And people were like, what planet did y'all come from? And it was like, I was born in Tacoma, shit. So, but the way that I was raised, the way that I was taught, the way that the things that I was exposed to just put me so far ahead mentally. It's also a small town, right? So far ahead mentally than the people that were around me that, like I said, it scared me.
What scared you? The fact that you had so many gifts or that you were just, okay.
Yeah. Cause I could like kind of look at things and pick it up quick and be like, oh, I could do that. And then I would just do it. I mean, I'll give you an example. So I was I grew up in a family business from 13 to like 20. I was working in the business. It was like we would make food and distribute it to local stores. And my mom, I would go out with my mom to deliver to these stores. And she taught me how to do all that. And then I expanded that to like, we had like 40 stores I was delivering to. And then I said, oh, you know what? I think we should have a cafe. And then my mom was like, well, go find one. And I didn't. I was like, what? She said, yeah, go find one. That's what you want. Go find one. So I go out like on my little delivery route. And then by the end of that week, I found a place that was for sale. And by the end of that month, we had it.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So like my manifestation game used to be like crazy. And I'd be like, oh, shit. Like, how did I do that? And then I was there. I had a cafe. I was like, well, shit, I got to go open this cafe. And then I didn't really know what I was doing. But I figured out a way to make it successful. You know, I had the support of my family, but it was me there every day figuring things out and creating a menu and sort of like just figuring out. And it went from a thought to existing. Like, I think we should blah, blah, blah. Boom. I have blah, blah, blah.
Well, you know, words are powerful. And
I didn't know that back then, but I do now. Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, I'm really looking forward to the cookbook because I definitely want the peach cobbler. I'm definitely looking forward to that. And I'm definitely looking forward to your film because, like I said, I love history and I love timepieces. So whenever that's getting closer, please let us know so we can bring you back on. And how can the people find you?
On my Instagram at AYIND. E at Allende is my Instagram, and I filter everything through there. So,
okay, so just one, and then everything else they can click on that and then find you everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome, awesome, guys. Thank you so much. Peace out. Hey guys, what is up? Thank you so much for listening to Subject Thread Podcast. You can catch weekly episodes on Mondays and Wednesdays. Please stream on Anchor FM, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and culturecurbside.com. Peace and blessings. Yeah, that's crazy. Isn't that crazy? Like those memories, it's like 20 plus years old, but you don't feel old, but you like, yo, that's 20 plus years old.
Yeah, I don't. And Atlanta make you feel like, I don't know, Atlanta keep you young, I guess. It's always changing, so it's always making you evolve as a person or a business.
Absolutely. And Atlanta has so much culture just in terms of like the civil rights that was there before a lot of us. It's like a really cultured vibe. And there's different pockets of Atlanta that's so super dope.
Yeah,
and like speaking of Atlanta and different vibes, Peter Street was a place that wasn't really gentrified back in the 90s.
Nah, it was more like abandonedness. So like it was really crazy. I remember walking through Peter Street doing Freaknik. I think it was Freaknik 95 or 96. And it was just completely abandoned. It was just bums and homeless people. And it was completely just abandoned buildings everywhere. It wasn't no businesses except maybe the barbershop, Off the Hook Barbershop was pretty cool.